Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we have the pleasure to interview Ted Fluck. Ted is a sales and marketing team building expert, as well as a best-selling author. Ted enjoys hosting monthly LinkedIn Live presentations to hundreds of listeners and in-person presentations to CEO peer groups. Ted's aim is to make sure leaders are better equipped with knowledge and tools to build a dynamic sales team and drive exceptional sales results. Welcome to the show, Ted.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Sam. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So to start things off, please share with our listeners a little bit about your background and your path to becoming a sales and marketing building expert.
Sure. I kind of fell into sales for what it's worth. I got out of college, went into the military. I was a captain in the Army for 5 years and was excited about moving in the financial services industry and excited to get into sales to try something new from there. But really found for me, it was a passion and a skill set and really enjoyed the work and loved the quality of life that it could bring to me and to my family. And from there, it was just kind of took off, stayed in the financial services industry, moved through a few companies that way, moved into the medical device industry, capital equipment sales and medical industry. Worked for some laboratories and built some fantastic teams as I moved up into management, national sales managers. And then I also have worked in the education space, working for some consulting firms and professional development companies in the education space, running their sales and marketing organizations. So 25 years of building teams and selling things. It's been great.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your service, Ted. The first question that I have is something that David and I did last year, which we'll learn from this as well. But can you share with the listeners, what are the most common hiring mistakes when a leadership team is hiring for salespeople?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, Ken, I find too often organizations don't really know what they're looking for. And what I mean by that is they truly don't understand their own culture and what that would mean to their clients. And the best example I can give in that is kind of everyone always says they want this alpha hunter, right? I want somebody to go out there and just kick down doors and make 100 calls and just get me clients. And that's great. And like, clearly there's no judgment about anybody like that. But I would say probably only 15 to maybe 20% of the companies out there really want that because they will freak out once they get that person into their company culture who's terrorizing their teams and their clients. And the clients will likely get upset from time to time about people who typically have that, you know, kick down the doors mentality. Now, with that being said, with training, with maturity, those alpha hunters out there can be great people, can be very, very dynamic. But oftentimes people make the mistake of getting a little bit too aggressive in who they're hiring for their sales teams.
Essentially saying you need to do like a culture fit, or you need to figure out like, or that, or be prepared to bring someone like that in and have them tame down over a period of time. Or
yeah, well, they're going to be hard to tame. What I would say, Ken, is this, is if you're going to have that, be prepared to have the support systems and the structures in place. You have to have, they're going to need a very strong, mature manager, and they're also going to need some assistance and some team around them, which can, you know, just jump when they need to jump and provide that person what they need to provide, because they're going to be demanding things right away, all for the right reasons. They're closing deals, they're selling, and they're going to be moving on to the next target. If you're a sales company, if you're somebody like that, you have to be ready for that, really, is what it comes down to. And Ken, again, this goes back to understanding your culture. A lot of companies really can get great growth with good salespeople, but they may not be the salespeople who, again, are like this like alpha hunter that's out there. You can do a lot of prospecting, a lot of hunting, and you can be very aggressive up until you meet the client. And that's what I always try to tell people. You want somebody who's tenacious up until their first contact. And then when they make contact with the client, they settle down, they back in, they're patient for the results, but but they're very diligent in the work that they do to get there, making sure that they continue to contact the customers and clients.
For a lot of the listeners, we're in e-commerce, physical products-based businesses. So we sell on Amazon, Walmart, our own websites, and the size of company, maybe doing $500,000 in revenue, maybe $5 million in revenue. And we want to go into wholesale or maybe dabble in retail or boutique. And there's two approaches. One is like lead generation, where you're having like a business development person generate leads. And another one is like what you said, an alpha, where you're just turning them loose and going into to close deals, right? And so on the business development side, do you think that needs to be a specialized hire, or can you use a VA with an SOP, a standard SOP? What are your thoughts there?
So I think there's a lot of thoughts about that, and there's a lot of change. That's been an explosion lately, Ken. And I say there's a lot of companies that have done that very well and very successfully. But I also get about 15 companies a day asking if I need lead generations and guaranteed results. And so that's not a bad thing out there, but I would suggest people really need to do their diligence and their homework, and they need to find companies that will allow them to test run them a little bit. And here's a really long lost art that I'm being a little bit sarcastic about: getting some referrals before you jump in with those people and talking to some other people who work with those companies, because there's a lot out there. And particularly as technology increases and the international borders break down, you have to make sure you know what you're getting on the other end. So I think BDRs and SDRs are fantastic. Again, trained, and I love what you said, written good SOPs, things that are thought through, because that's your representation of the company. And that's the first impression of what you're doing there, Ken. So if you're going to go down that route, which I say is probably a very good route for many people to go down that route, to get more leads, to get appointments scheduled, just know what you're getting and do your homework. I mean, don't be so rushed to get into the deal where you haven't thought it out and planned it out well.
Very nice. I want to spend a little bit more time here on maybe where to find these people. Friend of the podcast sells a product on Amazon that is a big hit. Their customer avatar seems to be women in that 55 to 75 age range. And so they had talked about trying to identify nursing homes as potential clients, which is kind of a niche or industry specific. And so what advice would you give to this person on identifying the right salesperson to address this niche that they're going after?
That's an excellent question. It goes back to really knowing your target market. And yeah, I love it, right? That really is developing your culture, and understanding your culture is understanding your clients and what you're going to do there. Clearly, that's somebody who's going to be patient, on the call or something like that. You're probably looking for somebody in that area who's probably very much a peer or maybe a little bit younger, perhaps. I hate to say that, and I don't want to get into that too much here. You may want to edit that out. Sorry. You're looking to get somebody, though, who can speak the language and understand and speak with empathy and patience for somebody who's in that situation, and is probably a very good listener. Not typical sales traits of salespeople, but listening skills in that type of situation be exceptionally important. When you're going to ask a few questions, you got to really want to listen for the answers and listen for the responses. You're going to be prepared for skepticism, and then you're going to be able to build some trust very quickly with them by listening. So that would just be like, some off the cuff, quick advice without knowing too much about that. But that's exactly what you want to start doing, and exactly what, good sales managers and good leaders and organizations and good talent, people have experience of sales, want to ask organizations those questions and dig a little bit deeper to find out exactly where you're getting at. What is that client persona? What is the product you're selling? Is it a commodity product? Is it a long-term sales cycle product? And depending on those types of things is really the amount of trust you're going to need to establish and build, and how quickly you're going to need to be able to transition that client to a purchase.
If I were to sit down at my computer tomorrow, and my singular task for the day was to try to identify that salesperson, where would I go? Where do salespeople hang out? Where should people be looking?
I prefer LinkedIn for most of what I do professionally speaking when it comes to recruiting. The other thing is, if you're going to have a recruiter, you'd be surprised. Like, not all recruiters charge a fortune for things like this. You'd be surprised how many out there can find talent and no talent. There's really the best ways to find salespeople are, in my opinion, are LinkedIn. But the number one way to find salespeople is through other salespeople. We constantly move. We're constantly moving other organizations. Every 3 to 5 years, we're somewhere else. Typically build good relationships with friends and have a long list of people who are dialed into the areas. And so that's how recruiters build their networks and continue to recruit and grow. And it's also how where I would look to for salespeople too. So if you're trying to pinpoint people down, I would look towards salespeople to find more salespeople. As silly as it sounds, it's true.
That makes sense.
Yeah, the answers to the questions are so simple, right? We don't think of them all the time. So
if you even want to go more pointedly back to that particular role you were talking about before, I would say, again, with salespeople being able to work from home now more than ever, with people not having to travel as much as they do, you don't miss out on the opportunity for people who are either in a semi-retired state, or don't miss out on people who are perhaps moms working from home but don't want to work a 40-hour week anymore because maybe they have new children in the house or something along those lines. Huge opportunities there, super talent, but just a different lifestyle that they're looking for right now. So again, if you're one of these smaller people out there, if you're growing your sales team, you could find really exceptional talent. I got to tell you, I've been through some experiences lately in the past 2 years with women that I've worked for in the sales force who have had children or who have had to transition, and they couldn't find jobs. And the people who did snag them up, they want a gold mine there. It's a really interesting way to kind of go about that and be flexible if that's possible within your company too.
I've got one more I want to squeeze before we move on. Once you find that person, what is the typical compensation method? Is it commission only? Is it a salary plus a commission? How does that typically work?
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Commission only is, to find the right word for this, commission only is going to be much more difficult. Let's just say that, and almost like borderline dangerous. And that people are just going to ghost you these days. I hate to say it like that. Again, it comes back to this referrals, do your homework type of situation. You don't want to go in and put in training and things like that for people. Again, I have worked with people in the position, I'm ready to start tomorrow. And then you get ghosted, or you start to go through training and they disappear. You need to have a level of commitment from that person that you want to train and you want to put effort and time into. And I firmly believe that you need to put some of that back into them with some type of steady compensation, be it a salary or a droll or something along those lines. But I would work it out that way, depending on the levels of organizations. And this can go all over the place. There can be different splits. And I always think of them as percentage splits. You know, as a 50%. If you have a target earnings for a target goal, 50% salary, 50% commission for some people is pretty traditional. If you go much lower than that, you're going to have to really, it might go into one of those part-time situations, which is okay. Lower than that, as far as the salary goes. You might be looking at a part-time situation, that's okay. But for growing organizations, which may find it hard to have in the budget that salary, it's going to be worth its weight in gold if you can muster that up for a few months and get, because you'll start to get a return on those dollars very quickly. Nothing gives you money back faster than a good salesperson. So it's a challenging question because there's just so many ways salespeople get compensated depending on where they are. I mean, eventually you'll get up into, you know, med device sales where you're paid massive commissions, then you're paid bonus compensations, and then it's all other different types of structure. But I would look more to those percentage splits and do what you can afford to do. And you have to remember that it's that you're expecting an investment from them to take your product seriously and to represent your company well. You have to give that investment back.
My next question here is a common thing that we always experience on our team. It's how do you align? So once you hire that, whether you get an alpha sales or whatever salesperson you get, what you bring someone on, you know, on the team, and then you've got your email marketing, you got your social media, you have your ads team. And so how do you synchronize your sales, your new salesperson with these other teams and make sure they function in the ecosystem properly?
I don't know if you guys are branded too much or not, if I drop a name, but throwing out from HubSpot, they call it smarketing, sales and marketing working together type of thing. And I subscribe to that fully. If you have separate sales managers and separate marketing directors, they have to get along. They have to be on the same page and they have to have the same mission. Oftentimes you're finding the separation is usually going away to fall underneath one type of leadership there. And that's very, very common these days because of all the work that has to get done. Ken, when you're talking about that, you're exactly right. The marketing team's job is to take those market qualified leads, all of the prospects that are out there, all of that information that they've gathered up, they're getting all that, bringing that information in, they're getting an inbound process coming in or whatever it may be. They're hitting the website, they're filling out the landing page information, the data, but now what? And is that just handed over to the sales team? And is the sales team gracious for that? Is there a feedback loop about the quality of that and how we can improve? So they have to work together as far as that goes, Ken. And you need a robust sales team these days, particularly in multi-channels. You got to hit people so many different places for them to even begin to recognize your name and your brand before it turns over to the sales team. But one of the biggest things I've always tried to influence my sales and marketing team was just understanding each other's responsibilities and being gracious and grateful for what was brought to your way. A marketing team has to be enthusiastic when sales teams make the close, and the sales teams have to be gracious for everything the marketing team is working hard on and working together. And the more they work together that way in an environment and give each other great feedback on what's working and what's not, I think the teams really can come together that way.
I like that. I like smarketing. That's a new phrase for me. But
I can't say it's mine, but I use it 24/7. So I have to throw it out there. You know? But yeah, you have to think of it that way. I mean, of all of the team, of all of the groups within an organization, I mean, it's one of the two groups and one of the two divisions or parts of the company that need to work seamlessly together. It's just so vital not to. And sometimes you just find it's like false, not even false. It's just usually just ego gets involved between people and not getting what they want or not good enough and blah, blah, blah. But you need to have good leadership and good management. Push that aside and get everybody on the same page quickly.
Very nice. Very nice. This next one is a two-part question. First part, how do you deconstruct an old sales process? And the second piece of this is how do you build dynamic sales organizations?
All right. I'll go back in time a little bit here. When I was a combat engineer in the Army, and our Latin motto was constructo et destructo. So construction and destruction. So that kind of always resonates with me in the back of my mind. So where we bring that into the real world and where that applies, particularly into sales. Sales teams can get stagnant and sales teams can get old. And as we talked a little bit about before, there's typically decent transition within sales organizations, but not always. And you have to really look at what your goals are and what you're getting out of your sales organization. And if you're still achieving your goals, and if you're not, let's pull back and say, okay, why aren't we? There's so many layers to this question when I talk about deconstruction of sales team, but really you're looking at it, who's accountable to what goals, and have you set meaningful goals for growth within your organization? If you're a territory manager, or if you're, you know, there's a lot of titles for that, vice president of a region or whatever it may be, and you've been there a long time, the odds are typically you're not bringing new accounts in, or what they would call like bringing in new logos, right? You're growing a mature market. You're growing your current clients. Hopefully you're upselling and you're continuing to upsell your organization into a particular account. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But what happens is you fail to continue to grow the market share. And we have to identify ways when we deconstruct old sales processes or old sales myths. Is this not saying that that person's not doing their job, but what your expectations may be are more accounts and getting more accounts into the company and growing your footprint within a geographic region. And if that's the case, then we have to break down some of those barriers. We may need to deconstruct geographies, territories. We may need to find different roles for people who have good skill sets but aren't going out knocking on doors anymore and finding new people to bring in and growing the brand. But what they're doing is they're providing excellent account management. So we talk about deconstructing those things. We talk about working that way, deconstructing old dogma, the things that everybody hates, you know, oh, we've tried that before, it doesn't work. Or, oh, it's not that way anymore. Or, oh, my client doesn't do that. Or, oh, this client doesn't prefer that. I can tell you true stories of where I didn't have good relationships, or I may not have had a good relationship in a certain hospital system, one reason or another, and that's okay. If I didn't have a good relationship within a hospital system, and then somebody came in and backfilled me because I moved on or moved to a different area, and within 6 months, they sold this huge deal. I was like, whoa, 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 what happened here? That was all my work. Well, it wasn't, you know, despite the fact you're good at what you do, you're not a perfect match for every account. So getting fresh blood in there can also be a good thing for the organization as well. And other people have opportunities to excel that way. So deconstructing out that old dogma is a really important thing to do. It can get dangerous when you start to do that. Because again, just look around. Where were we 5 years ago when it comes to social media? Where were we 10 years ago when it comes to internet? You know, we weren't doing anything online. We didn't have meetings. Podcasts weren't really that big of a deal 5-10 years ago. And now everyone's constantly listening to them everywhere they go. As the market does change, people buy in different patterns in different ways. If you're not ready to deconstruct those old myths, you're going to fail on a lot of growth goals that you have moving forward. So, and the reconstruction, the long question, I'm sorry if it's too long of an answer, but when we look at reconstructing or rebuilding or constructing an organization, rehiring into some of those positions, that those first few hires you make are absolutely essential to absolutely get right. And I always say that to people, you absolutely have to get those first those first new sales hires right when you have a large or an embedded sales organization, because they're going to be the ones setting a new example for new growth. Very, very often, if you can eliminate the old dogma or eliminate any expectations of what success is at the old level, have people come in and just do great work and hit your KPIs, and be very, very diligent, they're going to achieve a level of success that sets a new bar, and that level of success sets a new standard for the team. And that's how we reconstruct that old dogma. And that's how we reconstruct the sales team, by bringing new people in who really do set new expectations and new growth. And you see this everywhere. You see it every time there's a great new quarterback that comes into an NFL team, and all of a sudden the whole bar rises and everybody on the team starts playing better. And you can see that also in organizations too.
No, that's good. That higher level strategy, I'm breaking it down. But yeah, it definitely makes sense. I mean, to reanalyze things, over and over again and try to figure them out a new way. The next question, it kind of goes into taking a step back when we're talking about sales reps bringing someone in. Now, as a business owner, or as a leader, we're going to expect an ROI on that hire. And so essentially we're investing in them. What should the ROI be? And then also, what are some, I guess, KPIs or ways to measure the success of this new sales rep?
An excellent question. I get asked that a lot. And that really does depend on the products you're selling. There's some really high margin products out there where you get a much higher ROI. There's a shortened sales cycle and a longer sales cycle. But so that's going to vary. But let me say it this way, is that you should, more importantly than what the ROI is, if you're looking for them to bring in twice, like there's a lot of times we look at it and say, look, if you hire a new salesperson, within 2 years, they're going to bring in three times the amount of money they're costing you. So when you throw in their salary and their commissions and all of those other types of things, they're going to be in three times the top line revenue. Within a year, I would typically say 18 months. Within that first year, they're going to be bringing 1.5 times their salary, which is their salary and their commissions is what your targets should be. So it varies a little bit, but I like to look at it like timeline that way. Some products have a much longer sales cycle and they're like much higher ticket items. So that may vary a little bit, but going back to your original questions, as we're talking about before, knowing those KPIs and at least knowing what those targets are, that they're reasonably set, reasonable expectations, that they're not going to, go gangbusters right out of the gate and have all of a sudden be able to cover all these things. They very, very well may be realistically within 90 days though, to start to be able to come up a little bit and then start to cover the money that you've invested in them. The key though is to know your math, to know your own margins, to know what it costs to have the salesperson, the sales marketing team, or what the cost of acquisition is for a new client, and to back in your expectations that way. Like, how long is it going to take me to recover this investment? What can I expect for it? 6 months, a year, and like 2-3 years down the line. And that's, again, that's how you start. That's how reasonable organizations set KPIs. It's how they set their commissions plan and comp plans every year. And it's how they set their growth goals as well.
Dig in on that cost a little bit. So if I'm a seasoned sales rep, I've been with a couple different companies. I sign on with David and Ken, and I go out and I sell $100,000 worth of merchandise. What would they, and I know it depends on the product and the industry and the life cycle, but like generally, what amount would I be expecting in return? Is there a general percentage? And
as a salesperson, like in commission, is that what you're
saying?
Yeah. I'll throw out some numbers out there. I mean, I would, if it's a large team, they do $100,000 of sales, but if it was one sale, they're probably expecting a 10 or 15% commission. If it was $100,000 of sales, but the sales company that was 100 sales or $1,000, maybe they're only getting a fraction of that. Maybe they're only getting 5, 6, 7, 8% for each one because it comes more easily. So looking back at that though, I would suggest, and it also would go into, if you are paying them a salary, look at that split. So it comes into that cost of goods. And I hate to give you nebulous answers, David. I'm sorry for that, but it really is that total thing, right? So if I'm 100% commission, we can just say then that, if you break down and do the reverse math on a monthly basis and they need 10 sales a month, then look at, I want to pay 30% total of that out, 15%, like 30 of that total out, half of that went to the salary, the other half we paying commission. Different ways to kind of look through that, but those are some examples that can get you through. But in most companies, something around 20% give or take is what you want to be spending on for your sales and marketing as a whole. So depending again, what type of product you have. So if we can start to look at that as well, what's that whole budget look like and where can that money go into? And more of that's going into marketing these days because of the needs, so many different needs for marketing, different channels of marketing and marketing specialization. But that would still hold hold true to you only grow out the sales end. One of the good things about paying commissions are you're only paying for what they're selling. So that's usually a very good thing. And that's where you can never really shy away from that part. You know? And good companies, big companies where people don't leave and they love working and they're very profitable. I mean, big companies like Siemens Medical, or they call themselves Siemens Health and Ears here in the US, companies like that, they have extremely aggressive compensation plans after they've made certain targets too. Like, this is where we're expecting you to make, and let's, you know, and that's the number that you've been given. If you go over that, let's just say you had a 10% commission to get there. All of a sudden you go a little bit over that, you're going to get paid 20% commission. You go farther than that and a higher target, you're going to get 30%. They heavily incentivize you to go past their goals and past their organization's goals. And that's the type of sales culture that can, that people absolutely love to be part of. And once they, you know, really get into rhythm there, they can make great amounts of money, and they're bringing in great money for the company too. So it works both ways as far as the revenue model works that way.
Very nice. I really appreciate that answer. And no worries on giving nebulous or general answers. A little background on that question. So for a lot of people that sell on Amazon, they're going to take a 15% referral fee. And then in order to sell on Amazon, you need to have pay-per-click advertising, which generally runs 10 to 15%. And so right out of the gate, you're looking at a 30% haircut. And so when people are thinking of brick and mortar, what would it cost? That's a really helpful data, because you would not have that referral fee or the PPC cost.
Not in brick and mortar, you wouldn't, but certainly, yeah, and that's, you got to pay to play with Amazon, right? That's what it comes out. I mean, to be part of the biggest sales distribution engine in the world, they're going to take their part of it as well. And that's part of it. It's almost like it's a franchise fee if you were in a franchise model as well. It's very similar to something like that. You're going to have to pay them to use their networks and use their systems too. Yeah, that shouldn't come out of the salesperson's pocket though. I mean, so it's like, it's just a cost of goods. It's an expense.
It seems like every podcast we do nowadays covers some type of AI, because it's here. It's coming. It's going to, you know, take over and rule everything. And so, Ted, how is AI going to impact and improve sales and marketing over the next 3 to 5 years?
If we get that far, is that just...
No, I said crystal ball. Sorry.
Oh, crystal ball. Yeah. I guarantee this is exactly what's going to happen with AI. Look, it's already impacted marketing in a big way when it comes to marketing copy and when it comes to sales copy and writing and producing. I've seen it and I use it tremendously on my own social media and social media postings and the speed to which you can do that. What AI will do in the next and continue to do, what it's already done and what it's going to continue to do as more and more people embrace it, it is going to eliminate a lot of barriers to entry that certain people had like to hold on. So all of a sudden, everybody's game is going to have to step up a little bit now. Let's step up a little bit more, right? It's going to increase a lot more noise. And I always say there's chatter and there's noise. And it's a, you know, if you ever hear an orchestra before they all come, before the conductor stands up, it's just a racket. It's a bunch of noise. Everybody's doing their own thing. And that's kind of what I feel it's going to be like with AI on social media platforms. It's just going to be, you're going to be bombarded. Now, if you can pull your personal brand, and if you can pull your own marketing strategy together and have it very complementary, where you're sending, you're doing your emails, you're doing your direct messaging, you're working through your video, you're on podcast, you're doing everything you can for your personal brand, and you're doing that in sync, and you're using AI to target the right markets and the right people, and that AI is generated well, where it's a constructed message, where you're on brand, you're on point, and you're increasing your influence that way. Well, all of a sudden it becomes a symphony and it works very, very well. So it will help people who are doing things correctly. It'll help professionals rise to the top. And it's going to be even more difficult for people who are getting started unless they really continue to invest in themselves and put more effort into it. And AI is here to stay. I don't know if you've seen the reel or whatever where this, I'm not sure which company it is, but where they're actually doing a phone call and the AI is there speaking to somebody, is taking the information in, and the voice is actually doing the sales. And, you know, thank you for the response. Thank you, David. I appreciate the fact that you're in that situation. Tell me more. And you're like, oh man, you know, but we're this close. I think the entry level stuff there, Ken, for sure is going to be a major issue. However, human beings are going to become more skeptical and they're going to like demand more human beings, human to human contact. Just like, you know, everybody was virtual and then everybody wanted to hang out at the office a little bit too, It's because they wanted to see their friends. So it'll like anything else, the pendulum will shift. But there's no doubt in my mind that there will be a healthy amount of skepticism out there when people are still making purchase decisions, and they're going to still want to do that with people.
The AI bots on the phone are going to replace the cold callers?
They may. They will probably do the cold, like, again, at what level, right? They will probably do cold calling for sure. There'd be no doubt. I would suggest that they may replace BDRs in a few years, and that the entry level sales positions, just like they would replace, and like ChatGPT and Jasper and all the other names that are out there, are probably starting to replace people who are trying to do some of the lower level copy and aren't doing very sophisticated writing.
They can't, not going to replace a closer though. That's for sure.
No, I mean, they're not going to, and they're not going to replace personality. They're not going to replace connection. They're not going to replace empathy, and they're not going to replace trust. And those are all exceptionally important things to have when you're selling and when you're building your brand and when your brand is you, when you're producing things. But it's gonna be a change. This is exactly what happened to the auto industry when robots came in. This is no different than that on a different level, but it's the exact same thing. It was painful that certain organizations functioned much more effectively. I'm talking about this as like we're going through labor union strikes for automobile industry as well. You know, it did. It changed. The technology changed the auto industry, right? Well, it'll be the same thing here, and it's going to change the marketing and the sales industry for a while, but people will embrace it. Let's talk about a pro for it. Maybe I can hire 10 salespeople now who are all AI instead of one, you know, then in lieu of one. And now I have much more reach. I have much more authority to get in that space. And so I can transition those leads over to a person on the other end. So it's going to be very, very interesting to say the least.
I agree. I recently helped someone else buy a car, and you know, you can really tell a good sales closer from someone who's just trying to make money. Like they try to build that connection as quick as possible. They try to listen and drill in. It would be scary to have AI do that. I mean, maybe it can, maybe it can't, but there's like emotion, there's lots of stuff going on there that high level salesperson is doing. Yeah. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, but
it will be. And you know what I love? I'm going to just talk about your point a little bit more and a little bit, maybe less on AI, but to that end, when you go into, you're talking about the car sales, when you go into a great car dealership, one that's run very well, one that's successful, the salespeople are fantastic. And you just know there's just a different culture in that sales dealership, because you know that they either are or aren't being pressured the same way as other places. They maybe have different incentives, or you know, they just know that their teams expect different things. And as a consumer going in there, you're going to feel that when you're asking questions about the type of car. Is that person really listening to you? Are they judging you? Are they trying to upsell you out of the gate? It's like, that's what they're like, no, I couldn't get the Raptor from my Ford F-250. I need a slightly less model, you know? That's great. I love it, but it's not going to happen right now, you know? So, you know, were they listening to those types of things? And that's, I think, again, going back to that AI, going back to that culture, you know, is that company culture really going to embrace that? And really, really, we're going to have interesting technology, and I'm sure it's going to be effective, but it's going to be interesting to see how the technology really does help makes people feel, and if they feel that they're being listened to and heard.
Very nice. Now, Ted, what is a fractional CRO, and what value could somebody expect if they were to hire one?
Great question. So a fractional chief revenue officer, so a fractional CRO is really, I mean, you take a, it's a chief revenue officer, but you're not going to get them full time, is the way I'd like to say it. So what you want to do is think about a chief revenue officer as really somebody comes in the organization and handles and manages and understands the entire revenue cycle. So where that dollar is, even before that person becomes a lead, and they understand where what money you're spending and what that lead cost is, all the way through the marketing process, or market qualified leads, the sales qualified leads, what they're paying the sales team, the marketing team, how that dollar works. And then once they become a customer, what you're doing once they're on board, are we upselling that customer? What's the lifetime value of that customer? How long do they stay with the organization? How many more times do they continue to buy? Really, truly understanding that revenue cycle throughout the entire lifetime of any type of client or customer that you bring on board, and helping the marketing team continue to dial in, helping the account managers or perhaps the service support teams really dial in to any type of cues and indicators where somebody may be ready to buy or maybe leaving the organization or leaving your services before they say no goodbye. You're looking at all that types of things as a chief revenue officer. And the work that people do on a fractional basis, though, that's very typically a 25, 30 year veteran in sales and marketing. And that can be quite expensive, though, a full-time CRO. But a lot of people can come on board on a fractional basis, either a fractional chief revenue officer or a fractional sales director. who really only handles that sales end of things. But either way, you're getting a lot of that experience, a lot of that talent, a lot of that insight, guidance, and you're bringing it to a level where it's just not a 40-hour work week to them. You may work 8 to 12 hours a week with one particular company or something along those lines to provide them the value they need. Another way to think of it is a fractional CRO or a fractional director of sales. Think of it as a consultant who's with the company for 6 to 12 months at a minimum, but they're responsible for the results. They're not just giving you a plan and saying, okay, we've done our evaluation. Here's what you need to do, and walking away where you execute it. This person's on board. This person's part of your team. This person's going to help you get those results and truly responsible for the outcome of that assessment and of what your organization needs. That's one of the benefits of going fractional versus just doing work with a consultant, which can be valuable too. And there's a lot of places for that. But a lot of times people are actually looking for the results and they want accountability more than they want to be told what they need to do. So it works well that way.
Excellent. So before we get into the fire round, do you offer for the listeners like free consultation call or if anybody's looking for any of those services?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yes, I'll talk to anybody. I always say, hey, let's chat. I mean, yeah, let's get on board. Let's find out where you are right now. Let's talk about it. I love talking about companies and people, and I don't care if you're brand new and, you know, you're really checking your bank account every day to see if you have money to get through the next month, or you're somebody who's been around for a long time and is a multi-billion dollar private or, you know, public company. It doesn't matter. I love talking about things. So if they go to my website at www.dynamicsalesteams.com, they'll find a place right there. We're just like, let's chat, jump on board, schedule, and let's find out where you are right now. Let's talk about some things. I'm sure you'll get some takeaways that'll come your way. And that's the least I can do to have a good conversation with somebody. So
awesome. Well, I appreciate that offer, Ted, for all the listeners. And if you're driving right now, which I do a lot when I listen to podcasts, don't write that down. We're going to have all those links in the show notes. And so it'll be there waiting for you. So David or Ted, anything we want to cover? Anything we left off, do we want to cover before we get into the fire round?
Nothing on my end. This has been a fantastic interview and looking forward to the fire round.
Ted, are you ready?
I think so.
We send all of our guests through what we call the fire round. 4 easy questions and we just rapid fire them.
All right.
First one, what is your favorite book?
Band of Brothers.
Nice. What are your hobbies?
Outdoors, anything outdoors. Hunting, fishing, kayaking, hiking, being with my kids, sports events. Yeah, anything outside.
Very cool. What is one thing that you do not miss about working for the man?
I can't narrow that down to just one thing. That's actually pretty hard to do. One of the things I do not miss working for the man is leadership is difficult in an organization, for sure. I really love being able to create my own vision and get my own results, what I want to do, and really constructing my own life here.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great one. Also, last one. What do you think sets apart successful entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Perseverance and grit. Same thing that make up great salespeople, and same thing that make up just good character for anybody doing anything. It's not just in sales or marketing, or it's not just business owners, but you've got to hit a few failures along the way, and you've got to see them as life lessons, and you've got to continue to adjust and work hard and persevere. There's just, you know, there's no way about it. Just keep hammering and you're going to be fine. But make sure that, you know, as long as you're moving on a good plan and you adjust the plan accordingly as needed, but you just have to persevere. That's just all there is to it, because it's not always going to be rainbows and sunshine.
Excellent answer. Totally agree.
Ted, if people are interested in getting in touch with you or checking out your book, what would be the best way?
Best way is on the website. So I know we're not writing it down, but it would definitely be just dynamicsalesteams.com. And yeah, I'd love to be able to meet with you. You can find my books on there. You can find time to schedule with me just to chat or learn a little bit more about the products and the offerings that I give to people on different sales teams. And I'm really excited to meet more people and find out more about organizations that are out there and talk about what they're going through and help them increase that revenue and do some great things for the companies long term.
Well, very nice. Ted, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thank you for being a guest on the Firing the Man podcast, and we're looking forward to staying in touch.
All right. Thank you very much, David. Thank you, Ken.
Yep. Appreciate it.
Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, Getida.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?